October 11th, 1981. Dear Jeff, I happened to see the Channel 7 TV program Hooray for Hollywood Tonight with the segment on Blade Runner. Well, to be honest, I didn't happen to see it. Someone tipped me off that Blade Runner was going to be a part of that show, and to be sure to watch it. After looking, and especially after listening to Harrison Ford discuss the film, I came to the conclusion that this indeed is not science fiction. It is not fantasy. It is exactly what Harrison said, futurism. The impact of Blade Runner is simply going to be overwhelming, both on the public and on creative people, and I believe on science fiction as a field. This is not escapism. It is super realism, so gritty and detailed and authentic and goddamn convincing that, well, after the segment, I found my normal present-day reality pallid by comparison. What I'm saying is that all of you collectively may have created a unique new form of graphic artistic expression never before seen, and I think Blade Runner is going to revolutionize our conception of what science fiction is and more can be. Philip K. Dick.
Sorry, nobody down here but the FBI's most unwanted.
Agent Mulder, I'm Dana Scully. I've been assigned to work with you.
Oh, isn't it nice to be suddenly so highly regarded? So who did you tick off to get stuck with this detail, Scully?
Actually, I'm looking forward to working with you. I've heard a lot about you.
Oh, really? I was under the impression that you were sent to spy on me.
If you have any doubt about my qualifications or credentials...
No, Scully. It's Monday night, and this is 42 Minutes, a production of Sync Book Radio and distributed by thesyncbook.com.
Hello and welcome. I'm Douglas Bowles.
And I'm William Morgan. And you can find our archives at 42minutes.com, and you can reach us by sending a message to mail at 42minutes.com. You can also follow our tweets at Sync42 and at SyncBook. Tonight, our theme of contact continues.
Instead of grays, we're going to consider Sirius in 1973, and we'll do so with author and essayist A.K. Wilkes, who wrote for Steam Shovel Press about the contact experience of Philip K. Dick and Robert Anton Wilson. Wilkes has worked as an attorney, researcher, and writer, and is also a screenwriter. His continuing research into the subjects of PKD, RAW, LSD, H.P. Lovecraft, Crowley, and the UFO enigma is moving toward a book and or film in the future. It's a pleasure to be hosting him today. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's great to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thanks for joining us. And so, let's just start at the very beginning. How did you get interested in those subjects? The connection of Philip K. Dick, Robert Anton Wilson, and the Sirius connection?
You know, it probably started off actually through the film that you referenced, Blade Runner. Seeing that film and being blown away by it, and then seeing some of the other films that were based on Philip K. Dick novels, which include movies like Total Recall, A Scanner Darkly, and then films that weren't directly based on his novels, but that the creators acknowledged were heavy influence on them, like The Matrix, for example, which the Wachowskis acknowledged that Philip K. Dick was a heavy influence on that film. And then so through the films, that directed me to the writer and reading his short stories, reading his novels. And then through that, I ended up buying a biography of him called Divine Invasions, which talked about his life. And his life was just as fascinating and interesting and complex as many of his stories. And I became interested in the unusual experiences that he had. And then after reading about those experiences, I later discovered Robert Anton Wilson and his great book, Cosmic Trigger, which talks about some of the interesting, unusual, unclassifiable almost experiences that he had. And Wilson and Philip K. Dick knew each other. They met a few times and talked, and they exchanged a lot of mail together. And in the book Cosmic Trigger, Wilson mentions Philip K. Dick and his experiences. And in Philip K. Dick's exegesis, his nonfiction diary, journal, encyclopedia, biography, he mentions Robert Anton Wilson. And so what I found interesting was that they had these unusual experiences where something seemed to contact them. They had some experiences of contacting by what they perceived as an other. And that specifically, this thing that contacted them stated that it was from Sirius. And so here you have two writers in roughly the same time period, Wilson in 73 and Philip K. Dick in 74, having this unusual contact experience where both entities or parts of their own brain, if you're more skeptical, which is fine, announced that they were from the Sirius star system. And then through that, I started looking at some other experiences that happened in that same time frame, and I made a few connections that I don't think other people had made, and I said, you know what, this is really interesting. I want to pursue this, and eventually kept pursuing it, kept researching it, and decided to write the article about it.
And so what I know, I mean, one of the things that we kind of winked at with our introduction is this, you know, the X-Files has relaunched, and it's interesting. it's fun and it's interesting, but you know, it, the X-Files really literalizes that whole UFO experience. Whereas some of this stuff that we read about in the fiction with Philip K. Dick and Robert Anton Wilson tend to be more, it's right on the edge of you don't know if it's real or not real. I wonder how you're responding to the idea of the X-Files now in 2016.
Yeah, I'm an X-Files fan from way back. I love the show in its original run. And I'm happy that it's back and I'm enjoying the episodes. But you're right, it's a little bit different take on it. You know, and when I first started getting interested in the UFO phenomenon and researching it, the majority of the work on it, the majority of the books and articles and films about it are talking about something in a more literal sense of nuts and bolts spacecraft coming to this planet being piloted by extraterrestrial entities. And that's one interpretation of the you know, set of facts and the phenomenon. But if you spend some time looking at it, I came to the conclusion that 99% likely, for 99% of the incidents, we're not talking about nuts and bolts spacecraft. If you look at the journeys, the distances that would have to be crossed by any conceivable energy source that we can imagine now, the distances involved are too great to realistically make sense that that's what's happening. And also, the amount of interest and frequency of contact doesn't seem to make sense for a civilization that would be, you know, hundreds of light years away. So if you come to that conclusion, does that mean then that you say, well, these are all deliberate hoaxes, or they're misidentification of military aircraft, or their people are delusional? No, that's not the conclusion I came to, because of the hundreds and hundreds of incidents witnessed by people, and the psychic connection, not people claiming to see something in the sky, although I talk about that a little bit, like with John Lennon and some of the other people, but not seeing something in the sky, but having something connect to their brain, having some kind of psychic connection with something that they perceive as an entity outside of their body, outside of the brain, that communicates and imparts information to them. And so that's when I started looking for the alternative ideas about what was the UFO phenomenon and what is the contact experience. And that's where I started reading some of the things by Wilson, by Carl Jung, by Terrence McKenna, who were saying that, yes, there is a real phenomenon here. there is something that's happening outside of the brains of these observers, but it's not necessarily nuts and bolts spacecraft, but it is something that's real. And it's real in the sense that in some cases you could photograph it, it's real in the sense that in some cases you could see it on radar, and it's real in the sense that something is making contact with people's brains and imparting information to them, but it's not necessarily extraterrestrial in origin in the sense of a planet and a civilization that's hundreds of light years away.
So then instead of a flying saucer, it's a mushroom?
Wait.
You seem very informed. So in certain circles, individuals like Robert Anton Wilson, Timothy Leary, even John Lennon have been connected to ideas like MKUltra or CIA manipulation. Even Philip K. Dick was paranoid about himself. Where are you at with that? I mean, how much of this is just controlled counterculture or somebody using propaganda to mind control? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I don't rule out that there could be some aspects of the UFO phenomenon that you could trace back to the Pentagon or Langley, Virginia, or somewhere else. I think there was one memo right in the post-World War II Cold War period where someone from the CIA talked about the UFO phenomenon and its ability to induce panic in people and whether this could be used for intelligence or counterintelligence purposes. But I don't buy that that's the majority of the phenomenon that's happening. And the allegations that have come up about certain prominent people in the counterculture, like Huxley and Timothy Leary and Terence McKenna, all being conscious or unconscious agents of the CIA or the Eastern establishment, I don't buy it simply because the evidence isn't there. And having looked into it, I don't accept that that is the case. I mean, that's a separate issue that we could talk about more or not, but I just don't see the evidence for that.
Oh, we're just gonna push the envelope a little bit further. I mean, what about the John Keel side of the thing, where it's not aliens at all, but some kind of demonic possession that is a hold on our prison planet, like Earth?
Right, and yeah, I should definitely include John Keel as one of the people who started off with the nuts and bolts approach to the UFO phenomenon, and then came to evolve to see that it was something else, what he called the ultra-terrestrials, not extraterrestrials, but ultra-terrestrials, and said that when you start looking back into history, you see that this is not something that started with Roswell and the post-World War II UFO craze. This happened in the 19th century, the 18th century. You go back into reports in the 14th century, the 15th century, back to cave paintings on the wall of things that look like spacecraft and that look like entities. And I think his books, The Mothman Prophecies and Our Haunted Planet specifically, get into this idea that there is a real phenomenon that's happening and there are entities that contact people, but that they're probably not from outer space and they're probably not from hundreds of light years away, but they exist on this planet. Maybe in another dimension, maybe in our own dimension, but they have some ability to contact certain people at certain points in time. And that is what I started to follow and see the evidence of, and that's the trail that I started to go down and see that different writers and thinkers had different pieces of this concept, including McKenna, Robert Anton Wilson, and John Keel.
Okay, so then we can go a number of directions, but like contact. I mean, so one of the things in Philip K. Dick's contact experience was this. He was certain that he knew something, and there was the break-in. Did you ever come to a conclusion? You know, because I know that I think that really his safe really was blown up, but the question was, did he do it himself, or did somebody else do it? Or, you know, was it some kid looking for drugs?
Yeah, I mean, no, it was absolutely a real incident. It absolutely happened. And I was able to interview Phil's last wife, Tessa, and ask her some questions about some of these subjects. And yeah, Phil, you know, would write down on paper every possible suspect, and he included himself. He said, "What if I did? What if I blanked out and I did this?" But to my extent, looking at it, what I could decipher, Phil did attract. You know, Phil was paranoid, and he would tell you that. But I, you know, there's a saying: even paranoids have enemies. He did have enemies. He came on the radar screen of the federal government probably for the first time, I think, in the 1950s, when he wrote some letters to scientists in the Soviet Union, and he later found out through Freedom of Information Act requests that those letters had been intercepted and copied by the CIA. So that was his first appearance in federal files. He then attracted attention. There was a radical magazine called Ramparts back in the 60s, and they did a protest where writers and artists and prominent people refused to pay taxes on grounds that the taxes were supporting the Vietnam War. He joined that protest and was listed as one of the writers in the magazine. He refused to pay his federal taxes, and the IRS eventually confiscated his car for non-payment of taxes. So he came on the federal radar screen again. He spoke to Timothy Leary by phone, and in a time period when Timothy Leary was under all kinds of federal surveillance, and when Timothy Leary later escaped from prison, it's possible that Philip K. Dick was one of the people they might have considered that could have contacted Leary again or provided some help to him.
So
And then,
I need some chronological stuff, if I may.
yeah.
You're talking about him talking with Raw. Okay, so which came first? I mean, which book came first? Was it Vallis that came first, and Robert Anton Wilson found out about K. Dick and contacted him, or vice versa? How did all of that work? And about what time period did he contact or have contact with Leary?
Right. The period he had contact with Leary, and I'm not sure if I can pinpoint the year, but it was before his safe was blown up. It was when Leary was in Canada with John Lennon, actually, when Lennon was doing a protest there. And I can't put my finger on the year,
Okay, but
but
that
okay.
helps.
And the Robert Anton Wilson, the peak of his unusual experience, contact experience, was July 23rd, 1973, which there's a great video of him that's on YouTube where he says, July 23rd, 1973, it's a great day that will go down in history or something. Two very important things happened on that day. One, Monica Lewinsky was born, and two, possibly contacted by an extraterrestrial entity from the Sirius system, or so my reality tunnel at the time led me to believe. Phil's experiences happened, he called it the 2-3 experience, and it happened in February or March of 1974. So it was after that experience, and I'm honestly not sure who contacted her who first, but I know that they did meet several times. They talked to each other several times in person, and then after that, they exchanged letters quite a bit.
Because in my own personal experience, I read both their books back to back, and for some reason, I linked them together because, you know, his Robert Anton Wilson's daughter was named Luna or something along those lines. That
Yes, it
she,
was.
yeah, so she dies at in the book, and then Sophia dies in Philip K. Dick's Valis, and for some reason, I had this crazy idea. Like the whole Mother Goose character was actually Robert Anton Wilson. And knowing how much Robert Anton Wilson was into Crowley, I had thought about it. I had tried to research it actually, because Luna wasn't her real name. Her real name was like Stephanie or something. And then I thought about Crowley's idea about moon children or Babylon working. Do you know what I mean? And then I figured maybe he, like, maybe Anton Wilson was trying to make a moon child and had this daughter named Luna who was killed. And then Sophia was actually Luna and Kay Dick. But I don't know the chronological order of how they knew each other, or if, like, their meeting came after Valis or before Valis. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I never made the connection, the possible connection that could have been an influence between the real-life death of Luna, Wilson's daughter, and the character of Sophia in the Valis novel, who is possibly a new messiah and who dies very young. That's a really interesting connection that I never thought of. Now, specifically, the Mother Goose character is primarily based on David Bowie.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Right. And in the movie, in the novel Valis, they go see a movie. And in real life, Philip K. Dick and his friend Kevin, who's the writer K.W. Jeter, did go see a movie, and the movie they saw was The Man Who Fell to Earth, which starred David Bowie. So I think the Mother Goose character was primarily based on Bowie, although there may have been other influences on that character as well. But the connection you make with the daughters is really interesting, and it's quite striking, and I never thought of that. I never made that connection, but now that you say it, it definitely seems possible that it could have been a conscious or subconscious influence, because there is a striking parallel there.
So why Sirius? Or does that just sound cool? I mean, so why?
There's others, though, aren't there, AK? I mean, there's like more people just than those two have had experiences and draw them towards Sirius.
Right. That's what's so fascinating about it, because I think Sirius is 8 light years away. I don't have it right in front of me. But there are star systems that are closer. I think Alpha Centauri is the closest star system, and it's closer than 8 light years away. So why that system in particular? You know, why did two people have the reality tunnel that the perception of outside entity contacting them and saying it's from Sirius? In fact, in the novel Valis, Philip K. Dick, who's talking to the entity, they say they're from a star system, and he says, "Would you care to identify which system?" And they say Sirius. And in Wilson's case, he got the message in a dream. Sirius is very important. And he said, "I had never really heard of the Sirius star system before and didn't attach any importance to it." Then in the research, he found out that maybe, keeping with Wilson's maybe logic and model agnosticism, that there was a historical background where people in ancient Egypt felt there was a connection to Sirius. And in fact, they felt that that the two systems were in close contact during a certain period of the summer, the dog days, which included July 23rd, when he was contacted. And that in looking at other cults, looking at some of the stuff from the Freemasons and from other ancient groups in Egypt and Sumeria and Babylon, that they wrote about Sirius, and they wrote about the Sirius star system, and that there was this tradition of people that were called the builders or the engineers, who contacted people in these ancient societies and taught them about engineering and mathematics and construction and science. And maybe this is all mythology, maybe this is all legends and stories, maybe there's a factual basis to it. He also writes about the Dagon tribe in Africa, where they have an oral tradition of claiming contact with the Sirius star system, and that they knew and had drawings done of the fact that this was a dual star system before that was even known to astronomers. And there's some possibility that they obtained that knowledge through contact with European visitors. So Wilson keeps a skepticism about it, but there is something unusual about how often Sirius comes up in the myths and legends and stories from these societies in Egypt, Samaria, Babylon, the Dagon tribe in Egypt, and it appears in the Freemasons, and Crowley mentioned Sirius in some of his writings. So why it keeps popping up when it's not the biggest or closest star system, that I don't have an answer for.
But so then have you arrived at any answers?
I have not arrived at any answers yet. I'm still on the path of searching. Now, I should mention another book. You know, Wilson's book, Cosmic Trigger, is a fantastic book to read, and he keeps, throughout the book, he never comes to any dogmatic conclusions either. He keeps his spirit of maybe logic and model agnosticism and says, here's one perception of what happened to me, and here's one interpretation I have of it, and then here's another interpretation I have of it. There's another book, though, that he mentions. It's by an author named Robert K.G. Temple. It's called The Sirius Connection. That is a more hard sort of, you know, approach of looking at the stories and legends and paintings and drawings from Egypt and Samaria and Babylon about this connection to Sirius, where he's saying, yes, I'm convinced, you know, a civilization from Sirius contacted these ancient peoples, and they did impart knowledge, and that he says, I think it's very likely that they are still watching us today through a satellite, through other abilities, that they are keeping an eye on us, keeping us under surveillance, and that he says in a great line from the book that gave Wilson the title for his book, and in fact, I speculate that we may be under surveillance, under their watchful eye at this very moment, and that they may be seeing how we are progressing as a society, and if we are readying ourselves for contact with them, and at the moment that they feel is opportune, that they may contact us again. And then Temple writes, if what I'm saying is really true, then they would be aware that I'm writing this book. And if I'm writing this book and changing public consciousness about this connection, would they see this book as their signal? In writing this book, am I pulling a cosmic trigger?
See? And are you kidding me?
Yeah. Isn't that great?
No, because that would make sense, though, because Philip K. Dick made the same association as far as like how his work was being used. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
in Radio Free Abermuth, it's like more MK Ultra, but in Valis, it's more I am being interfered with by extraterrestrial intelligence, of course, from Sirius. So it's kind of like, it's weird because even if you look at Philip K. Dick's movies, there's weird connections between them. Have you noticed this before?
In what way?
Okay, so just on the surface, right? Okay, so there's the dark-haired girl, right, who penetrates all of his work, where those show up actually in the movie. And you can see that some of them even have the same actress. Like, what's the movie? Next with Nicolas Cage, right? Where he can kind of see what's coming in the future, which is almost the exact same thing he does in the movie The Knowing. But going back, his dark-haired girl is Jessica Biel, right? Where in the new adaptation of Total Recall with Colin Farrell, who is also in Minority Report, another PKD, his dark-haired girl is also Jessica Biel. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you look at all of the cinema and all of the media and all of the books as influenced by Sirius.
Right. If he was connected by this outside entity, be it Sirius or something else, yeah, he even acknowledges that it inspired his creativity and that he felt he was kind of in a mental and physical and creative slump, and that after these contact experiences, it reignited his creativity and led to some great books by him, including Radio Free Albemuth, Valis, and I not sure if after that was Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said, or if that came right before, but he wrote several great books afterwards, and he attributed it in part to the experiences that he had. So, right, if you accept this as real, then in some way, this work, the novels and the films based on the novels, there's a spark of connection there from this outside entity.
And what does this have to do? I mean, so that's the curious thing to me is the LSD connection.
Right.
Mm. Ooh, yeah, Scanner Darkly.
Well, because it kind of is the thing that opens them to the contact experience, but that it's also where the it's both the medium and the message somehow.
Right. That's a really interesting thing that I just sort of briefly touch on in the article, and I think it's more worthy of more investigation. But you're right. Philip K. Dick took LSD twice in his life in the 60s, but it was very influential and meaningful to him. John Lennon certainly took LSD. Robert Anton Wilson did, and he took it during that summer that he had the contact experience. So, yes, I do mention the possibility that in some way, maybe LSD opens up that door of communication. Terence McKenna certainly talked about this in regards to DMT, but also in regards to the mushrooms. And, the psilocybin is based from a fungus, and LSD, while synthetic, is also based from a fungus. It's based from the ergo fungus. So they're both, there's a branch there where they're coming from a similar place. And yeah, I did wonder, if does taking LSD or mushrooms or DMT, does it open up or switch on some communication channel in the brain that open them up to either the experience of being able to communicate with this outside entity, or as Wilson sometimes said, maybe it opens up powerful untapped areas of the brain, and that you need to believe that it's an outside entity talking to you, imparting this information, because that's what your mind can accept, but that really it's coming from a part of your own brain. But it does seem, in the instances that I talk about, that LSD may play a role in opening up that untapped area of the brain, either for communication with the deeper part of the brain or with communication with this outside entity.
And so where is your research leading you next?
You know, that's a fascinating thing. I don't know. There's so many different areas that I want to continue to explore. I just started getting more into H.P. Lovecraft, who...
shit.
Yeah, now I'm talking about who had dreams and wrote about the subjects and ideas and things that he saw in his dreams. And I connected some of that to PKD and Wilson. But I am very interested in the concept of the LSD or the DMT or the mushrooms opening up these untapped areas of the brains with communication. I do think there is a phenomenon that's out there. I'm 99% sure that it's not nuts and bolts spacecraft, and I'm 99% sure it's not something from light years away. I think it's something that's connected to our Earth, that it's been here before, that at certain times in history, it connects to people and imparts information. The great scientist Tesla talked about that he received information and saw things, including detailed blueprints for inventions.
Wait, who plays Tesla in The Prestige? David Bowie.
That's right. That's exactly right. Who plays Tesla in The Prestige? David Bowie. Who played The Man Who Fell to Earth? David Bowie. What was the film that PKD saw and wrote about in Vallis? It was The Man Who Fell to Earth. David Bowie.
It's all connected in this weird kind of like Robert Anton Wilson way.
Right, exactly. And I felt a lot of connection with somebody who I know has influenced you guys. Carl Jung talks about synchronicity and archetypes. And that something that exists outside the human brain, but but that's connected to humanity. It's part of the collective unconscious. And these ideas of the archetypes and synchronicities that happen in life, and you see some of these synchronicities in the article in the history I write about. I know we didn't even mention Dr. Albert Hofmann. You know, there's a famously that he discovered LSD in 1943, and they even celebrated his Bicycle Day. But actually, it's more fascinating than that, because he first discovered the formula for LSD in 1938. He put it on the pile of failed projects. 5 years later, and several months after the first live nuclear reaction, he had what he called in German a Vorspiel, which means a presentiment. And he was picked out of the failure pile, this formula he worked on 5 years ago, and then rediscovered LSD. And so you talk about the synchronicities there. But yeah, I definitely think there's so many synchronistic connections here. And that's part of how whatever it is we're describing or attempt to describe, or whatever it is I'm exploring, it often operates in synchronistic ways. Causing people to meet other people, causing someone to make a connection with something, causing an event to happen. And in that way and in that manner, it influences human life. And what Phil, what PKD called VALIS, Vast Active Living Intelligence System, influences people's lives. And he said the two most important things VALIS does is it fights the empire in all its forms, the empire being the evil aspect of man, the Roman Empire, Nazi Germany, totalitarian communism, or the pseudo-fascist military-industrial complex Wall Street entity in the West. That's the empire. So VALIS helps fight the empire, and it sparks creativity, ingenuity, invention, and art in man. And that's part of the path I'm following to explore. And I keep the model agnosticism where I'm not saying 100% that it's not something that's in the human brain, and that the human brain is an unexplored region and this could be something that's in there. But I tend to see the accumulation of the evidence that this is something that's outside of the human brain. It's some kind of entity, some kind of living system that contact certain people and influences human life in a certain direction.
I am, now that you mentioned it, I'm kind of realizing there's kind of but there's definitely a political dimension to both Robert Anton Wilson and Philip K. Dick's writing too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely there is. I mean, in his novels, Philip K. Dick created this character, Ferris F. Fremont, who was basically based on Nixon. It was a combination of Richard Nixon with a little bit of Joe McCarthy in there, an openly sort of American fascist. And right now you can draw your own parallel conclusions to Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or whoever you might insert there. But there was definitely a political dimension to PKD's writing when he talked about the empire, when he talked about humanity and, you know, the free individual human and not becoming part of the machine, not becoming part of the machine state. And with Robert Anton Wilson, the same way, believing in libertarianism, in anarchism, in freedom and constitutional rights. And certainly in this period, 73-74, you have the height of the Nixon empire. And that certainly is a factor. And I wondered, why did all this happen in 73 and 74? You know, what was going on in the world that caused these experiences? And politically, you certainly look at Nixon at home, who was starting to implement some of the actual characteristics of a police state. He drew up enemies lists, and John Lennon was on his enemies list. And the people on the enemies list were targeted for IRS audits. They were targeted for FBI surveillance. They were targeted for negative press leaks and actually really subverting the Constitution. You know, of course, the break-in at Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office, the break-in at the Watergate. But Nixon was doing far worse things than that. And then abroad, of course, you have the Vietnam War, and the overthrow of Pinochet in Chile and these other things going on. But certainly there's a political dimension there, and I'm not sure how that impacts this or how it influenced it, but it seems to be part of the equation.
I know that he asked you, where you're at with it and where you're going with it, but I'm wondering what you're actually working on right now.
Right now, well, I've sort of been working on different areas. I just started getting into a little bit more of Lovecraft and some of the first generation of writers. There was a writer named Arthur Machen who had some interesting synchronistic experiences happen in his life. Same thing with Lovecraft. And then probably the other thing I'm looking at is trying to explore more aspects of this phenomenon, looking at some of the history in what appears, reappears in human writings, from the cave paintings to the ancient societies. And they call it different names. At first, they call it men coming down from the sky, and that these are gods. In the Celtic countries, they called it fairyland, and they experienced contact with what they called fairies. And then if you look on the quantum physics angle, the concepts I'm talking about that David Bohm calls the implicate order. And if you look at Jung, it gets into archetypes and the collective unconscious. And what I'm trying to synthesize is that many of these writers and thinkers they're expressing the same thing. They're encountering and writing about the same entity, the same thing that exists, but they're experiencing different aspects and couching it in different language. So there's a scientific approach, there's a psychological approach, there's the artistic approach, but they're all talking about the same thing. And that's what I'm trying to nail down, to see if I can express and find out more clearly what it is and what its purpose is.
Well, that was 42 minutes. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on.
You bet.
And to all of our listeners, you've been listening to A.K. Wilkes on 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com. You can find his contact at Steam Shovel Press, and we will link to it. For more information about the Sync Book, our guests, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast and would like more, consider becoming a Sync Book Plus member. Some of the membership benefits include full access to the complete audio archives, discounts on books, behind-the-scenes scripts, bonus audios and videos, as well as monthly online hangouts with the host. All this and more can be found at thesyncbook.com/membership. Thanks so much, and 'tis an ill wind that blows no mind. Take it slow, but it's not typical. Drunk on the good life, I'll take you to paradise.
take me back to a time only we knew how to wait. We could waste a night with an old film, smoke a little weed on the couch in the back.